from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM. This is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Organ donors save lives.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. Grammy Award-winning recording artist and all-around gentleman John Legend sits down with us to talk about the importance of arts in education and his new documentary called Stand Up and Shout, Songs from a Philly High School. It debuted this week on HBO and shows the true healing power of music.
Being a part of this class allows them to find something within themselves that maybe they didn't even know was there.
Then, what's taking so long for the Pennsylvania legislature to legalize adult-use marijuana? And if it happens, will there be business opportunities for all?
We would like to have a more localized economy in our state.
We talk with Sharon Perry Thomas, co-founder of the Diasporic Alliance of Cannabis Opportunities, about how the Commonwealth is lagging behind many states in the cannabis business. And Sharaday Howard's got you covered with Shara in the City. All that and more on Bridging Philly.
This is Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
A new documentary features a group of teenagers in a Philadelphia public high school who, after 2 years of isolation due to COVID, found some ways to express how they felt and all of their experiences through music. The film explores the power of music and how arts education can unlock creativity and be a source of hope and healing during hard times. The HBO documentary film Stand Up and Shout, Songs from a Philly High School, is on HBO and streaming on Max. The executive producer is no other than multiple Grammy Award-winning recording artist known for hits like Ordinary People, All of Me, so many others. By the way, he's the first Black man to win an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. And he is here with us today, the incomparable Mr. John Legend.
Hello.
Hello. Along with John is the film's executive producer, Mike Jackson, who co-founded the Get Lifted Film Company with John Legend. He's produced projects such as NBC's Emmy Award-winning Jesus Christ Superstar and Lionsgate's Oscar-nominated film La La Land. Mike is from our neck of the woods, actually from Wynwood, Monco, in Montgomery County.
In Montgomery County, I'm very loyal to Philadelphia.
Very good. Also joining
Proud
us is
Eagles fan.
Proud Eagles fans.
Very nice. Very nice. Also joining us is the director of the film, Amy Schatz, who's worked on several documentaries and children's shows, including the animated musical The Runaway Bunny and a children's documentary, What Happened on September 11th. Welcome to you and welcome to everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Well, the students at Hill Friedman World Academy are pretty fortunate. Tell me about what was the inspiration behind this particular project.
So, as you mentioned, my background is in making films with and for kids. And I had read about the Surgeon General's report in 2021 about this declining mental health status for kids and that we were involved in a mental health crisis for young people. And I had wondered with HBO whether or not we could explore that. And I think, you know, talking to kids, hearing about the world through their eyes is always deep and interesting. And we wondered, how could we explore what kids were feeling, what stresses they were experiencing? And I had read about this incredible program at Hill Friedman World Academy where kids were creating original songs. And it touched me very much. It seemed a way to look at not only, you know, what they were expressing in their music, but also possibly a way to see a vision of healing, how we can help kids through music programs. And so that was the beginning.
And for John and Mike, how did you get involved in this project?
Well, you know, A, being native Philadelphians and hearing about the story through HBO, we met Amy, we chatted with her, she told us her passion for the school and this program, and we felt our brand, our platform would really be an enhancement to the project and a way to kind of share the message about music education, the need for music education, and propelling that message forward.
Yeah, and if you just think about where we were as a country, you know, and as a globe, you know, coming out of the pandemic, still experiencing the effects of the pandemic, and how isolating it felt for a lot of young people, especially going to school on Zoom and just feeling disconnected from the world, music and arts have a way of bringing us together, and we were all missing that. And I think, given the mental health crisis that Amy was talking about, given the sense of isolation that people were feeling during this time, it was really timely for us to celebrate people coming together to create something together. Yeah. And I think that's really the beauty and the power of this film.
Now, this was a time for the students to finally express themselves. I know that they were paired with local musicians. I'm wondering, what are some of the sorts of subject matters that they came together to sing about and write about?
Well, the songs are some love songs. There's some crushes. You know, there's a song called Be My Girl, where one, Nehemiah's, there's a girl who was in the classroom he was in love with. So he wrote a love song. There were some
I wrote some of those in high school.
Right. There were songs about longing and loss. There's a girl who wrote a song about her grandmother who had died. There were songs about violence, about Philadelphia, songs just about, and there was one song which was the inspiration for the title of the film, which was a song that was called Stand Up and Shout, and the idea behind the film was to create something that people could rally behind and that would uplift people.
Yeah.
The kids who wrote that song really wanted to write something that could just lift the spirits.
Okay. Well, you know, the pandemic forced a lot of us to become creative, and it actually allowed us to tap into some creativities that we didn't know we had. Mm-hmm. So I think that's awesome. And as we pay more attention to things like mental health and the importance of mental health, I'm thinking that this project must have been extremely healing for the kids and for everyone involved.
Yeah. You have a perfect quote about what that young lady said in the film.
Yeah, there's a beautiful moment where Dayani, age 15, extremely shy. She was wearing a mask well after all the other kids took their masks off, very closed up. And, you know, it was kind of magic seeing what happened with Dayani. By the end of the film, she's written a song, she's found her voice, and she says in this beautiful moment in her interview, "At first I felt like a crab who wouldn't come out of its shell." Mm. And then she goes on to say, "I'm a firework. No, I'm a flower blossoming." Wow. So, you know, that was kind of the healing power of music,
yeah.
You know, right there in that quote.
What if I told you we could get a song written in 5-10 minutes? He said, "Cat, let's play a quick game. I have a list of titles right here, right? What's the title?"
Explosion.
Explosion. We like that?
Explosion.
All right.
Okay.
Let's figure out a concept.
Like, you know when you think of something and then your mind just start going off like exploding thoughts and then it just go everywhere and you right. can't think.
So you're having exploding thoughts about what?
Life.
Life.
Thoughts about life. Okay. You're going to tell me all of the words that pop into your head when you think about explosion. I'll go first. Bang. What else?
Boom.
Boom.
Pow. Fire.
Fire. What you didn't notice was I saw that you had a hook right away with your first three words. As soon as you came with that bang, boom, pow, that right there could start our hook.
Yeah. I got an idea for the first thing, right? Like a bang, pow, pow, bump, bump, bump.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, I like that. So he said bang, boom, pow. My thoughts are running wild. I'm in a bad mood. You should use caution. My thoughts are on the timer. They keep tick-tocking. I'm on the gun, donna. My mind keep running. I'm on the down, about the gun, and it's so shocking.
Bang!
Hey!
Boom!
Hey!
Bow!
What's going on?
My thoughts are running.
Now, a lot of the students weren't musicians working on this. I'm wondering how the process was for them.
Well, they're all required to take this class at the high school. So even if they don't come into it, you know, with an emphasis on music in their lives and even understanding of the power of music in their lives yet, being a part of this class allows them to find something within themselves that maybe they didn't even know was there. Mm. And music can be really powerful for anybody, even if it's not your thing, even if it's not the thing you've spent a lot of time focusing on. You can find a way to tell your story. You can find a way to connect to your emotions. You can find your way to communicate with other people through writing lyrics, through expressing yourself through music. And we see that power in the film.
Yeah.
And what's really cool about it is it's literally a full-on recording studio. So you can learn how to produce, write, sing. Like, it's fully encompassing the entire production experience, which is great.
That's a great experience that they all had. You know, I'm wondering, you know, you did tell that one story, Amy, and I wanted to kind of talk about when the projects were completed. just from what I saw, there seemed to be a tremendous outpouring of emotion after everything was completed. What were they feeling when they completed their projects?
I think they were proud. And I think there's Jaden, one boy at the end of the film says, you know, we really did something. And he says, and music brings people together.
Yeah.
And I think they all felt they were so kind to each other and so supportive. And it's really the story of a group of people coming together. It's not about one particularly talented student. It's really a group coming together to do something extraordinary. And you see kindness, you see support, you see, you know, teamwork. They're doing it together. And that's rare. When you go into a high school, there's all kinds of divisions. But this was a group of kids, and maybe it had to do with coming back from the isolation of the pandemic and just being grateful. They're there together, they're making music, and they're supporting each other.
Yeah. It seems like, and you know, John, you mentioned that, you know, music is a unifier and it's great and it's a healing unifier.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids seem to want to leave their mark. They wanted to, I mean, I don't know if they can change the world, but they wanted to leave some kind of a message behind.
Mm-hmm.
To foster change.
Well, if you think about it, that's what music is. Like, yeah. Music, when you record music, like, it's forever. And it's your legacy. And that's one of the most powerful things about my career is that I know that long after I'm gone, like, these songs that I've written are going to be a testament of who I was in this world. And they last forever. They're eternal. And so these kids got to create something eternal. This recording is going to last forever. This film is going to exist forever as a document of where they were in their lives at that moment. And that's a really beautiful thing to be a part of, to know that what you're creating is eternal.
John, you started your career at an early age, and I wanted to talk with you about the importance of arts in schools. I mean, we hear a lot about STEM, but we're pushing for more STEAM.
Because, STEAM, yes. That's right. You got to throw that A in there.
We need the arts.
The A, and you know, I funded a program in my hometown. I grew up in Springfield, Ohio. I came to Philadelphia to go to college, but I grew up in Springfield, Ohio, and I raised a bunch of money so that we could refurbish the theater at my local high school and fund arts programs at my local high school, because I know how important it is for our young people to have that outlet. And all the things we've been talking about with kids, you know, feeling isolated, feeling like they couldn't express themselves, the arts are there to help remedy those issues. And they provide this way of collaboration that, you know, some kids find it through sports. You know, some my two older nephews, they're both really good athletes and they play football, and they find that connection with other people through sports. But there's a lot of kids that aren't, you know, athletes, and they need other ways to find teamwork and collaboration and expression, and the arts can be so important for them.
Amy, I know you work on a lot of documentaries, and Mike, you've worked on a lot of these projects, and I'm sure that when you work on documentaries, especially with kids, you tend to unearth things that you didn't realize. I'm wondering, what are some of the more surprising things that you learned when you were going through the process with the kids?
Well, one of the things that I love is interviewing kids, and when I was one-on-one with them, I heard a lot about their lives, and I heard a lot about kids' worries about time, pressures of growing up, what they were going to do with their lives, not wanting to disappoint their families, mm-hmm. you know, just all of those kind of yearnings and fears and worries and dreams. And I just felt like I want to love them and support them. Yeah. And, you know, one of the extraordinary things about the film also is that it's a tribute to great teachers and how they really gave these kids an opportunity to express themselves, and they supported them and they believed in them and made them feel like they matter. And for me, the surprises were really just the kind of the complex thinking that was going on. These are kids who are on the cusp of adulthood. They're 15 and 16. And I loved hearing about that. I mean, kids are always interesting, but I just wanted to say, you're okay. We wish you well.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the film where the kids are doing karaoke to Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, and the lyric, I hope life treats you kind, kept going through my mind, like, I want life to treat you kind. Sure. You deserve it.
All right, Mr. John Legend, Mike Jackson, Amy Schatz, Again, the HBO documentary film Stand Up and Shout, Songs from a Philly High School on HBO streaming on Max. Thank you, all of you, for being here.
Thank you. So it was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
24 states have legalized recreational marijuana. 14 states have passed medical use cannabis, including Pennsylvania. Now, there's been a push for adult use cannabis in PA for some time now. In fact, Senator Sharif Street has co-sponsored legislation to that end. PA residents cannot vote on whether or not the state should implement it, so it has to be done through the legislature. But the push has not moved the needle much, and some are wondering if this will happen anytime soon. And if it does come to pass, how do we make sure the playing field is equal for everyone who would like a shot at their own cannabis business? Here to discuss this with us is Sharon Perry Thomas. She is co-founder of the Philly-based Diasporic Alliance for Cannabis Opportunities. Welcome, Sharon.
Yes, well, thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Now, adult use legislation, it's been in the works for quite some time. Bills have been introduced. Governor Shapiro is on board, making moves with the hopes that sales would start in 2025. But we're not really seeing too much action on this. So I guess the first question is, why has this been so slow?
Well, you know, change does take time for a lot of people. And I think when we look at our legislators, they are really thinking about a prohibited industry. Cannabis at one point was legal in the United States up into the prohibition period of the 1930s. And so now that we've had this huge gap in not being able to distribute, not being able to grow, not being able to utilize cannabis, they are stuck. They are in a quandary. Some of it is moral, honestly.
Okay.
And some of it is just people simply don't know what to do with something that has been illegal for so long.
Okay. You know, you said some of it is moral, and that brings to mind the stigma that cannabis has attached to it. And that is difficult to shake. But then when you talk about things like the opioid crisis and being prescribed opioids in hospitals and the damage that it does and how addictive it is, there's not that much of a problem with that. But if you mention cannabis, here come the moral police, so to speak. But we're talking about adult use marijuana is, I guess, different from medical use, because with medical use, people understand you're using it for medical properties. But for adult use, yeah, that stigma definitely is there. What can we do to kind of shed that stigma?
Yeah, and let me just speak to that right quick, because for us, we really see it all as being medical use.
Okay.
Because there are people, for instance, who will go into a pharmacy and buy aspirin. Do we call that, you know, like self-medication? But when it comes to cannabis, it's all of a sudden it becomes this self-medication because you know that you may have pain. You know that your anxiety may be increasing. You know all these things. But all of a sudden, when you utilize cannabis, it becomes this big stigma. And so we really want to help to remove that stigma and take the shame away from those people who really have to use cannabis as a way to medicate, and understanding what that should feel like in a normal society, and as well as what it looks like in a normal society, because this is not new. You know, there are several countries outside of the United States where cannabis has been available for use in a social setting.
Right. And of course, here in the United States, we've got 24 states already doing that, right? So what is it that Pennsylvania can learn from other states, say like New Jersey, although I know New Jersey's business isn't as robust as they hoped it would be, but it is growing still. They just started adult use early last year. But what can Pennsylvania learn from states like New Jersey or other states where the program is successful?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that people automatically think about, they think, first of all, the whole city is going to smell like weed,
right,
to be honest
right.
with you. That's, you know, a myth. They also think that there will be an increase in accidents because everybody is going to be driving high. They also think that there's going to be an increase in other drug use. And that's also a myth, because where you have found cities that do have adult use programs, all these areas have decreased, and especially alcoholism.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's important to note. Let's talk about the money. How much money is there to be made for adult use cannabis in Pennsylvania?
Well, I would just say last year, throughout the whole country, it was reported $15.16 billion.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And for Pennsylvania, we have to start looking at where we can actually utilize some of this income and some of these taxes in our state. And one of the things that's really important as we talk about cannabis, we need to talk about the benefits for our community. So we all have heard of the war on drugs, for instance.
Yeah.
And for a lot of us, we like to say it was a war on people. And it impacted a lot of families. It impacted a lot of communities, which is still continuing on today. So let's look to see, as opposed to talking about, you know, all the negatives, let's see what some of the benefits are. Because not only are they talking about legalizing cannabis here in Pennsylvania, but they're also talking about it on a federal level.
Right. And I think some lawmakers are more comfortable with waiting for that move to be made before they make any moves in Pennsylvania. So that's interesting. Well, let's talk more about DACO, or the Diasporic Alliance for Cannabis Opportunities. In what ways is DACO working to ensure that the cannabis business industry is inclusive specifically to African Americans?
Yeah, so that's one of my favorite things to talk about is DACO, because, you know, one of the things that we realized, particularly traveling to other states and looking at the booming economy, is that there really were not Black and brown communities involved in cannabis. And so knowing how many people were the population of Philadelphia, and being able to now educate our communities about these opportunities. So for DACO, we focus on wellness, we focus on education, and we also focus on those economic opportunities. So when we talk about wellness, yes, we have a thriving medical marijuana program.
Right.
But we also know that this program, you know, it's not inexpensive. We also know that your insurance does not pick up the cost for what we call your medication. We want to inform people to let them know if you're low income, you know, there are certain provisions that will allow you to have discounts.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to education, Pennsylvania is way ahead of some other states in terms of research. Mostly all of our universities here in our state have some type of research benefit. And that is one of the reasons that cannabis still does have the stigma, because it's like, why are people using cannabis? There's no research. There's no use. But our universities are now in the position to really expose the truth and show some of the benefits of cannabis.
Yeah.
Also, one of the things about Pennsylvania, many of our community colleges, many of our two-year colleges, they have a certification program or an associate's program. Pennsylvania was one of the first states to actually have an MBA in cannabis, as well as one of our universities has an MS degree in cannabis.
Okay.
So Pennsylvania, educational-wise, is really far ahead of other areas in our country. And when it comes to economic opportunities, it's almost limitless. And why this is important to Black and brown communities, because these are communities that have been really disenfranchised by cannabis.
Yeah.
They have been impacted by higher arrest rates. And so now we have this growing legitimate cannabis business sector that is really booming in our state.
Yeah.
And many of these people who have been left out and locked out need to have the opportunity to be a part of it. And I mentioned earlier the war on drugs, and when there's any war, there's always some type of repairing of those communities. You start rebuilding.
Yeah. In terms of interest in having a cannabis business, what kind of interest are we seeing among the African-American community in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia even?
Yeah. First of all, one of the things that I like to tell people, do what you already do and just sprinkle a little cannabis on it. Now you have a cannabis business.
Okay.
You have cannabinized it.
There you go.
So if you're an accountant, you can flip the script and not start focusing on cannabis businesses. But for the majority of the people, a lot of people are interested in retail. A lot of people are interested in growing. And that's just what we see on the ground level. But outside of that, there are so many what we call ancillary businesses that can be a part of this industry. Everything from PR to product design. What you see in traditional businesses, you can also see that in cannabis. And many people already have the experience in it. And that's what people can't get. It's like, how now would I connect it? People cannot do what they can't see. One of the things that we do is that we have created a conference. And it's a conference that happens every year. It's always the fourth week of September. And this is a free conference because we wanted to reduce the barriers to allow people to actually come to learn from subject matter experts, to everyone from your elected officials, to your attorneys, to your doctors, to learn more about this industry in a safe space. And so bringing people together in this setting allows for this sharing of information and knowledge to be able to move on into the future of cannabis.
Right. And you're referring to Black Cannabis Week, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Black Cannabis Week is in its fourth year. Mm-hmm. And so we initially started as a conference, and that conference is still called the Cannabis Opportunities Conference.
Well, as we talk about people who already have a business, sprinkling a little cannabis on it, of course, you know, it's not as easy as that. So I kind of want to talk about some of the obstacles that African-Americans specifically face. I mean, just in starting any business, but to get into the cannabis market, the regulations, the licensing, all of that. What are some of the obstacles and more difficult things that may be met when trying to open a business like this?
You ask any marginalized community, if it's our farmers out in Lancaster, if it's, you know, someone in North Philly, any community will say it's money. That is the biggest barrier. So right now what we're looking at is corporate cannabis in Pennsylvania. And we would like to change that. We would like to have a more localized economy where the people who are growing cannabis can sell it here legally in a regulated manner in our state.
So what can we do to ensure that, you know, more African Americans have access to capital, licensing, networking opportunities to be successful in the cannabis business?
One thing we can do is that we can express our concerns and our needs to our legislators, as well as to our local civil rights communities, our NAACPs, our Urban League, both of them which do have national cannabis, some type of cannabis statement. And many of them are really pushing for what we call social equity. So, for instance, in some states, you have access to real estate. In other states, they pay for your cannabis license. They also have free training. So we have to look at some of those things. And I know we're saying Pennsylvania is really behind on it. And especially as I think Delaware just came on, we're surrounded by Delaware, New Jersey, New York. So as we look at these other states, Pennsylvania is really positioned to do it right. Mm. Again, the stigma is real. And I think when you talk to some communities, particularly in Black and brown communities, you say cannabis, you might as well say crack. And that comes with a huge, huge historical burden for a lot of people. So if we're not at these tables, if we're not in Harrisburg, if we're not expressing this, then they're going to go where they have always gone. And that is not in our communities. So there are so many benefits to looking at this from a holistic perspective, as opposed to looking at it as one thing, which is people just want to only get high.
Sharon, how can people learn more about DACO?
Yeah, you can find us at weareDACO.com. That's WEAREDACO.com, as well as BlackCannabisWeed.com.
All right, sounds good. Sharon Perry Thomas, co-founder of the Diasporic Alliance for Cannabis Opportunities, thank you so much for your time today.
And thank you.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
If it's happening in Philadelphia, Shara Day Howard knows all about it. Here's the latest, Shara in the city.
So you've heard of Mural Arts, but have you heard of their Porchlight program? The program that's trying something entirely new. A project focused on holistic healing and youth. It's called Our Land, Our Movement. It's described as dynamic, a public art initiative meant to foster healing and connectivity for youth, to renew a sense of belonging within their communities. And that's where Marguerite Hemming steps in. She's a dancer. She's also a local artist and activist who's been touted as a visionary. And this expansive project, she says, reaches teens from West Philly, Olney, and Chinatown through a series of workshops and performances, culminating in a grand dedication. So I made a visit to Mural Arts to speak with Hemming to learn more about the project that she says stems from the desire to heal. Welcome to Bridging Philly.
Thank you. I was very, very happy to speak with you.
So tell us about Our Land, Our Movement. What does that really mean?
Our Land, Our Movement is an experiment trying to heal our bodies in relationship to the land, in relationship to outside. We work with teenagers, but we are also looking to expand to people who just feel disconnected from place and from self. And we do that through movement and also through connecting literally to the earth with farming, herbal medicine. So focus was around trauma. And so we wanted to connect to 3 to 5 different neighborhoods in Philadelphia. And I chose the theme of displacement. So people who feel disconnected from their land and a sense of belonging, and also disconnected from their bodies. I'm a choreographer, so my research is with the body. So I wanted to have that as the site for healing.
That makes sense. So I think a lot of people kind of miss the point that art is a matter of healing, and especially in Philadelphia right now where kids are going through so much. This is a great avenue to kind of figuring out, you know, how to start the fix.
I completely agree. And what we did, I think the connection that happened was we connected the body to the land.
Now, how'd you do that?
So we worked with 3 different sites, green spaces, farms, in Philadelphia, one in West Philly called Reentry Community Farm, another one in Olney called Roots Garden, and then another one in Chinatown called Inch by Inch Garden. All of these spaces are run by people who are just dedicated to really taking care of land and their neighborhoods, and also in creating spaces for people to just gather safely.
So when we talk about gathering safely and the community and the body, this is all an extension of the same thing.
In order to sort of heal our connection to our neighborhood and feel a sense of deep belonging, we have to tune into our belonging to ourselves and to our bodies. So this summer, we tried to talk about, it's hard with teens, but we tried to talk about sort of like...
That's a real feat, to get these teens out of their heads and into their bodies.
Yes.
In a healthy way.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So we tried to have conversations around like systemic issues that keep people from feeling safe in their neighborhoods and right. having connection to the land. But we really just tried to do it through practice. We were like, okay, let's get y'all out here mm-hmm. growing food, seeing how practitioners of like farm spaces connect people to free food, connect people to the practice of growing their own food. And they sort of made their own connections to feelings of belonging and safety just through that practice.
Wow, getting your hands in the dirt.
That's right.
So there's something about being able to take ownership, to practice gratitude through attending to the earth.
That's it. Thank you for saying that. So much about this was about the practice of gratitude and how that can kind of combat feelings of isolation, alienation that have just soared since the pandemic and also soared since everything we're seeing around us in the news. And it's like this feeling of like fear. Yeah. So how can we have a practice of like giving thanks for what we have? Yeah. And then in return, like being able to give thanks for time with each other and this earth and senses of community.
And then ultimately wanting to give back.
Yes.
You know, you're grateful enough to kind of go, hey, well, maybe there's something I can do. Right. And to have a kid kind of take that on is a lot. Mm-hmm. How do you communicate that?
I think going back to the practice, like it was less of us talking about the power of giving back. And it was way more about us seeing the power of putting a seed into the ground, watering it, and a few weeks later seeing the fruits of that labor and seeing that go beyond yourself, it can feed multitudes. So it really connects to the individual, to the community in such a practical way that you don't need to say much.
And maybe they start realizing all of these wonderful things as time goes on. It's kind of like this time release lesson.
Yeah.
So there's this receptivity. And like you said, like not even knowing that they're getting these lessons, but they're also able to sort of start this articulation of like their view on the world and like their view on themselves. And so it's like such a sweet point in development to work with.
So a lot of people would ask, okay, so where's the art in it?
That's a good question, especially this is mural arts. So a lot of people ask, where's the mural? And there was no mural. There was a series of performance rituals that we like to think of as like a live mural, or like bringing the murals off the walls into the actual streets. So we performed outside at these sites, at these green spaces, at these sanctuary spaces.
When you say performance, people have one thing in their mind. What do you mean?
We worked with a costume designer, Max Brown, where she created these designs that were like all of these colors based on the teenagers' most vibrant ideas of themselves. Ooh. So just imagine a group of a dozen teens outside, like dressed very colorfully in very specific makeup and markings on their face. And they were doing simple movement, but movement that's connected to some of the types of farm work they were doing this summer. And then we ended that performance in a social dance where we were able to connect to the audience, bring them in to dance to some of the teens' favorite songs. The teens got to show off some of their, you know, like some of their moves and just feel like they could be witnessed in their fullness, really. We just finished a zine and we're going to be sharing that at our dedication Tuesday, November 14th at Icebox Project Space. And that's from 6 to 8 p.m. Some of the teens are invited to share some words. I'll be sharing some words. We'll be looking at the zine, watching some footage from the summer, and eating and really celebrating what was accomplished, because it took a whole village to sort of wrap around these teens. I'm looking to find ways to continue this into the future and expand on what we did in making it a bit more broad. We hopefully also want to connect to even more neighborhoods in Philadelphia to really start to erase this idea of boundary and like limitation on where we can move in this city.
Yeah. Marguerite, thank you so much for being here at Bridging Philly.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us for Bridging Philly, brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Organ donors save lives. Be sure to connect with us on Twitter at Bridging Philly. And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. For Sharaday Howard and our producer, Patty McMahon, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.